This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Ready for some tough questions? How about you discover your wonderful one-year-old child is, because of a mix-up at the hospital, not really yours? Would you want to exchange the child to try to correct the mistake? How about another? Would you be willing to murder an innocent person if you knew it would end world hunger?
They're very personal. There's no right and wrong, and it's just about, you know, who you are and what you care about.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk to the author of The Book of Questions and find out if there are any really good answers out there. We'll also hear about an investigation of American nuns by the Vatican and spend an academic minute with some really strong females. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. There are some questions that have no easy answers, and it seems like Gregory Stock has heard them all. Dr. Stock has compiled a book of thought and conversation-provoking questions into the new book, The Book of Questions. We spoke recently, and I asked him how he came up with the idea for this collection.
Well, it was very interesting. It was because there was an experience that I had had where I was with a bunch of friends, and we had a conversation that lasted into the wee hours of the morning, and it was kind of the kind of experience that you have a lot when you're in college or, you know, having a bull session of some sort, but later in life it doesn't seem to happen as much. And I was thinking, grappling with finding some sort of a tool that would generate that kind of interaction in a very easy way that would catalyze it. And because they're very rich and they lead us to develop friendships with people, to understand ourselves, to understand others in a deeper way. And that's what The Questions is all about.
Did you go out of your way to find questions that'll just make you go, oh, I know the answer? No, I guess I don't.
Well, I tried to come up with ones that would really make you kind of think about things in a different way. For example, there's one that says, would you tear the wings off of a beautiful butterfly for an all-expense-paid vacation? A lot of people kind of cringe even if they would do it. But then if the follow-up question to that is, would you step on a cockroach, which most people would have no problem with at all. So it kind of begins to make us wonder about, you know, what it is that's so different. Is it because a butterfly is beautiful, or, you know, is it just killing another a living creature, or what? Well, you know, a deeper exploration of something like that, or of one that is, you know, you're sitting in a cafe and there's someone at a table, a few tables over, and you just know that if you go over and introduce yourself, you're going to fall totally in love with that person, and they'll be in love with the most amazing thing that has ever happened to you, and you're not currently involved with somebody else, so there's no issue of betrayal. But you know that that person is going to get hit by a truck and killed in 6 months. Do you walk over and embark on that experience, or do you walk away? So questions that are very personal. There's no right and wrong, and it's just about, you know, who you are and what you care about and what your values are.
I imagine a lot of people would have different answers to these questions out loud than they do in their head.
It's amazing to me how often people seem to be very, very straightforward and honest about things, and often will sort of change their minds as they start talking about them more. Because there's no, I kept out any tonality that it's judgmental, as though, well, we're not saying there's a right and wrong answer, but a right or wrong answer, but you know you're a pretty crappy person if you answer this way. Like a quiz where you get rated and it tells you what kind of person, if you answered yes or no for questions 5, 27, and 52. So people kind of don't know. They sort of end up talking about it, and often it leads to tangents about personal things that happened to them, and, you know, an experience they had that they remember. So I think people are generally pretty honest about it. Kids certainly are.
I don't know. I think a lot of people would say I would never tear the wings off a butterfly, but then they'd go home and pack their bags.
So most people say that they would do it. So they're,
oh, okay, fine.
I'm packing my pack. I'm out the door. A lot of people do that. Some others say, oh, I don't know. I guess I kind of have to, but, oh, I really wouldn't want to. And, you know, it would be something that for some people they could do it and they'd never think about it again. And other people, they would remember it their whole lives.
How many people did you run these by before you figured out the fine? I'd love to hear the ones you didn't put in the book, but how many people did you run these by?
Oh, I was just in conversation after conversation. And then when, in terms of, I got a lot of feeling as the way that people would respond, because I've been on, you know, probably 1,000 radio shows about this sort of stuff, where often people will call in and be talking about their responses. And what's amazing is that people even interpret the question, the issue, in very different ways. For some people, depending on where they're coming from. I mean, one question may be about love. Another question is about money for them. I mean, if I ask a question that is for $50,000, would you be willing to put a pet to sleep? You know, a loyal pet that you care about. Mm-hmm. Some people say they wouldn't do it for anything, and we're talking about money. Others are saying it's about love. It's about loyalty. It's about, so they see it in a different context even. And as far as your question about the things that I sort of discarded, I thought that I would be able to come up with the best questions. You know, these are the good questions everybody responds to. But in fact, the really good questions are ones that a lot of people respond to very strongly, but some people don't respond to at all, because it sort of depends on what you're dealing with in your life. If you're grappling with financial issues, then financial questions are kind of really interesting to you. If you're dealing with your own mortality, then a question like, you know, if I had an envelope and in it is written the date of your death and you can't change it, do you want to open the envelope and look at it, or do you give me back the envelope? You know, that is really a question that is very gripping to people. About 9 out of 10 people say they wouldn't want to look at the date of their death. They wouldn't want to see it.
I understand that.
Right. I say I would.
Oh, okay.
Well, I can't. It would be very painful, but if I only had a short period of time to live, I would like to know that so that I can really maybe I would do things a little differently or behave differently. And if it was going to be a long time, that would be great to know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about, a good question is one that doesn't sort of get closed off by answers, but it sort of leads to more questions. It leads to more explanation. It leads to richer discussion. That's what I like about this. This has been, you know, I've done a lot of different things. I'm in biology. I ran the program of medicine technology at UCLA, and I've developed tried to develop therapeutics for Alzheimer's and such. And of all the things I've done, this has been the most gratifying, I think, because it really has just led to such rich interactions. And, you know, I get a note from somebody that says they got married because of this book.
Yikes.
Got to know somebody and formed a relationship.
Again, the name of Dr. Gregory Stock's new book is The Book of Questions. It's published by Workman. Still to come, the Vatican thinks nuns in America are becoming too independent. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1204. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. I'm sure a certain percentage of you who are of a certain age, read that as meaning me and people like me, were taught in elementary school by Catholic nuns. Today, American nuns are under investigation by the Vatican for being, quote, too feminist. The Catholic Church is conducting a million-dollar investigation because the Vatican concerns that nuns are too feminist, too independent, and too secular. For the past 50 years, American nuns have been moving out of convents, not wearing the habit, and becoming more involved in politics and social justice. Nuns are extremely well-educated, and they've been getting involved in changing society. The Vatican is concerned that this revolution in the lives of American nuns will spread across the world. And even with the new pope in office, the investigation is continuing. Emma Witherill has the story.
Joanne Roy is cooking dinner for the women that she lives with.
The turkey's ready.
Okay.
Joanne is under investigation, as are two of the women that she lives with, and 60,000 other women across America. Joanne is also known as Sister Joanne Roy. She's a Catholic nun. For the past 2 years, American nuns have been subject to a million-dollar investigation by the Vatican.
We kind of felt this is interesting. You know, there's a whole issue with sexual abuse with priests, and we're getting the investigation, you know.
In 2009, Cardinal Rode was the official in charge of religious orders across the world. In an interview on Vatican Radio, he warned against American nuns having a secularist mentality and a feminist spirit. This concern caused an apostolic visitation into American religious women. An apostolic visitation is a pretty big deal in the Catholic Church. It's the same kind of investigation that they're currently doing in Ireland into the way the Church handled and mishandled the sex abuse crisis. Most nuns only found out about their investigation by reading about it in the papers. When a woman becomes a nun, she commits herself to serving God and serving others. She takes three vows which govern her life: poverty, chastity, and obedience. These vows are made to God, but they're through the Church. Sister Pat Pora has her own definition of obedience.
I feel obedient towards the God that's within me and also to the people that I work with, that I serve.
And how much obedience do you feel towards the Church?
I think it's a patience that I, you know, but the obedience comes from, you know, in hand with patience there.
When Pat entered the convent in the 1960s, she followed a strict routine from sunrise to sunset, and she wore the habit. But then the Second Vatican Council happened, which allowed orders to become much more self-governing. As a result, many nuns chose to move into apartments and went to Mass less frequently. Sister Pat, like many others, decided to swap her habit for street clothes.
We're trying to be a presence in the world, and we can't hide behind a habit. The times have changed. You know, before it was more like semi-monastic. And I remember when I used to work at the hospital when I was a younger sister, and I was in habit. I'd get on the elevator, and here I was a professional, and people would see me, and they'd say, oh, isn't she cute? You know, things like that. And those kinds of things put a barrier between you and the people that you're working with, because that's a romanticized vision of what religious life is all about, and that's not what we're all about. You know, I don't want to be up on the pedestal, and I shouldn't be up on the pedestal, and it doesn't help either.
Sister Pat is petite and bird-like, a contrast to her strong political spirit. She started up this Spanish Mass, which is aimed at Hispanic immigrants in Portland, Maine. Latinos are the fastest rising population in Catholic churches, and each Sunday these pews are packed. Rainbow colours from the stained glass windows illuminate the musicians, who are a mix of South American nationalities. When Pat took the veil, she was asked whether or not she wanted to be a teacher or a nurse. Now nuns can be anything from lawyers to lecturers. They are extremely well-educated and get involved in changing society. Sister Pat works with immigrants, and she does more than pray for them. She advocates on their behalf, writes letters to congressmen, protests against anti-immigration laws. If someone in Maine gets detained, she gets involved.
Because I know the person, and I've heard that the person is in jail. I write reference letters, work with their lawyers, accompany them to court in Boston, whatever needs to be done.
What are people's reactions to you being a sister?
There are people that think that I shouldn't be. People that think that we're preaching a more socialist role or liberal or whatever, I don't know. But I think that's a gospel mandate. I mean, Christ was very political.
But not all nuns interpret the vows the way that Pat Pora does.
Go right up.
Sister Elizabeth Cobb lives with another nun on a small residential street in Sanford, Maine. She would prefer to live in a convent, but there aren't enough nuns around to enable that. She wakes up before 4 o'clock each morning to pray the traditional Lords in the third bedroom that they've converted into a chapel.
And if you just turn left, where the sun is coming in, is our chapel. And this is our altar. We are blessed by chastity. It gives us so much time to serve others. Poverty is the easiest of the vows. It's simple living. Obedience, I realized what obedience really means. It simply means I give up my own will and live the will of him whom I serve.
90% of American nuns belong to an organization called the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. The Vatican is currently doing a separate investigation into their doctrines. Sister Elizabeth is part of the remaining 10% who have their own group. She used to be in the same order as Pat Pora, but in the 1990s, their community split. The majority of the sisters wanted to join a more progressive order. The remaining dozen form their own more conformist group.
We have a special place in the church as religious women. Why would we separate ourselves from Rome? We wanted obedience to the church. Some of the sisters were more avant-garde than we are. Some of them did not choose to be at Mass every day. We wanted to wear the habit because it's identification. And I think today's world, there are people who want to talk with us. And separate from the church, I don't believe that we have a ministry.
My name is Sister Janice Farnham. I'm a member of the Religious of Jesus and Mary.
Janice lives in Arlington, Massachusetts. Her order was questioned in the Apostolic Visitation.
I think those who are in the Vatican always watching, because what happens in the U.S. is probably going to happen in other parts of the church. It just starts here.
The investigation has been conducted in four phases. There were meetings with the heads of the 400 religious communities across America. There was a detailed questionnaire, and some of the orders were inspected. American bishops have been asked to donate to the cost of this million-dollar investigation. And now the final report is due at the end of this month. None of the sisters investigated are likely to be able to read more than the report's summary. No direct action is likely to come from the report on this apostolic visitation. The cardinal in charge has been replaced. But the very act of being questioned has warned these women.
We all know that visitations come when there are problems. The hierarchy, the Vatican officials, seemingly were still back in the 19th century or even earlier, when women religious have moved ahead.
Why do you think the Vatican's concerned about women?
In the Catholic Church, it's not a community of equals. Really, the Catholic Church is a male-dominated, you know, institution.
Part of the intention of the apostolic visitation is to try and work out how to increase the number of nuns. Janice entered the convent in the 1950s. This was the boom time, with 180,000 sisters across America. Now there are just 60,000, and their average age is over 70. Janice is 72, but she's not concerned about the trickle of new recruits. She thinks that her generation was unusual, a result of the horrors of the Second World War.
When times are bad, what happens is people begin to reflect again on the values and the meaning of life in general. Bad times are good for religion, and good times are bad for religion.
Millions of Americans have homelands overseas that call to them with different value systems. This questioning by the Vatican is similar to the questioning that Janice has done herself over the decades into her own vocation.
I fell in love a couple of times, and I had to question, really and truly, is this what I'm called to do? And then during the years of the civil rights marches and the anti-war demonstrations with the 60s, which is really, I would say, when I came of age, spiritually. I did feel at certain times perhaps I would have greater freedom if I left the congregation. Now, why am I here? Because I know that I cannot be Janice Farnham if I'm not a religious of Jesus and Mary. It's that simple. And obviously, I'm very moved when I say it, that somehow my personal calling is wrapped up in being a part of this particular congregation, which is very limited, is far from perfect, has many problems, is diminishing quickly. But none of that matters. This is who I am, and I can be no other.
For Salt Radio, I'm Emma Wetherill.
There are some species where females have a lot more authority over not only their own lives, but those of their mates. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I am Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. In the animal kingdom, a female's ability to be highly selective in her choice of mates can shape the behavior and appearance of an entire species. And as Stefan Leupold, research assistant professor of biology at Syracuse University, explains, females of one species exercise more control than previously thought.
One of my main current interests is to understand what happens inside of a female when it mates with more than one male, causing sperm to compete for fertilization. Female promiscuity is extremely widespread throughout the animal kingdom and plays a critical role in the evolution of reproductive traits. We use genetically engineered fruit flies whose sperm glow either green or red under fluorescent microscope. These fluorescent markers allow us to visualize sperm within the female reproductive tract and to distinguish between the sperm from different males. Using these flies, we have documented a significant fertilization advantage for males that transfer longer but somewhat surprisingly slower sperm than their competitors. When entering the female's sperm storage organs, long and slow sperm are better at displacing their counterparts than are short but fast sperm. Gaining such a numerical advantage is critical for males as the relative numbers of sperm in storage ultimately determine paternity. More recently, we have also found that females don't just provide a static arena in which sperm compete. They themselves can influence the paternity of their offspring by various means. Most importantly, females vary in the timing of interrupting the process of sperm displacement by ejecting sperm from their tract. The longer a female waits to eject sperm, the more time sperm of the second male have to enter storage and displace their rivals. Thus, females can influence the amount of sperm from each male competing for fertilization. Together, these findings have major implications for the study of sexual selection and the coevolution of male and female reproductive traits.
That was Stefan Leupold of Syracuse University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors on our website, academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at wamc.org.